So, Steve, I wanted to ask you, you know, it wasn't too long ago that, you know, Tom talked a little bit about the oil shocks that we keep having, and I would probably argue you could say we had an ethanol shock several years ago where we had the perfect storm of high commodity prices, you know, high energy prices and low ethanol prices. How, you know, looking back on that, you know, your plant has been in production for 6 years. How did you take that situation, and how are you going to Washington, D.C., and trying to keep something like that from happening again? You know, how is some of these current policies going to affect you as a producer?
It really goes back to what Tom was talking about. We need to have open access to the fuel markets if we ever want to prevent this from ever happening, whether it's the same way it happened in 2008 or any other way. All the industry's really ever asked for is an open playing field. We believe we can compete head-to-head against gasoline if we're ever given that opportunity. You know, currently, basically, we're asking our major competitor, Big Oil, to idle their assets and use our product to sell them at their stations. You know, quite frankly, we wouldn't like it if we were being asked to do the reverse. I don't know why anybody's surprised that they wouldn't. But given the technology advances, and if you really look at who's behind the ethanol industry, it's the American agricultural industry as well. There's no better example of working your way out of a market than the American farmer. The history of the American farmer is, if there's ever an opportunity to make money, they'll produce enough to make sure that that does not happen. The ethanol industry is no different than that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the American farmer. You know, we have continually had surpluses in corn, despite the fact that the general consumer thinks that we are short on corn. We're predicting one of the largest harvests of all time this year. New production numbers came out last week. How is that going to affect ethanol production and specifically the corn farmer over the next several months?
Well, you know, the corn farmer is directly linked to our industry. If you look at the usage numbers, and we're using about 5.5 billion bushels of corn annually for livestock feed, and we're using about 4.3 billion bushels of corn for ethanol, in which we still get about half that back in a feed value, you can see that a 13 billion bushel crop, all you're going to do is continue to build surpluses. And having, as a farm owner and farming for 20 years, I can tell you, when you have surpluses, you have low prices. And if we want to really capture that entrepreneurial productive capacity of rural America, that's a fast way of bringing a lot of economic pain. And if the ethanol industry doesn't continue to eat up a good amount of that surplus, then that mountain of grain will continue to build. As you mentioned, we had a record corn crop last year on 7 million fewer acres than the previous record. We had an all-time record in terms of yield per acre and an all-time record in terms of volume. And already this year, they're projecting an even bigger crop. We're not expanding. We're not plowing up virgin lands or tearing down forests to expand production. But the productive capacity of America's farmers is second to none. One could argue they're too productive. We overproduce. So in the interest of rural America, they, not just corn farmers, they need the success of ethanol to eat up that excess.
It's exactly right. You know, Tom had talked earlier about the current energy legislation that we're under, ARCA's two regulations. One of the scary things is you would think that regulation was really pitting biofuels against oil in the marketplace. What it really does is it's biofuel against biofuel. It sets different categories for cellulosic, biodiesel, biomass-driven ethanol, corn-based ethanol. And we all have buckets to compete in. There's a maximum level for all of them to play in. Some are more weighted than others. The problem with that is, if you really look at what could potentially happen, you not only have capped corn-based ethanol at 15 billion gallons, you actually, once these other technologies come online, limit even further the amount of corn-based ethanol that can make the marketplace, which is going to pile more and more corn on the ground, which, if that begins to happen, you know, the nice thing for the last two or three years is farm subsidies are way down because of another industry that's popped up, consumed grain that is in surplus. If we start looking at 3, 4, 5 billion bushels of corn carried out, you're going to have an economic train wreck that this country's not prepared for. Right now, agriculture is not a hurting economy. It will be if we start doing that. And then what's going to be left over? We're going to be talking about a farm bailout at that point.
You are, and what Steve just articulated needs to be expanded. It won't just hurt the farmers. It hurts those rural communities. It hurts all the businesses that are dependent upon the rural economy, your farm equipment manufacturers, your seed suppliers, your chemical companies, all your input suppliers. Everyone has a stake, the local banker, the local CPA, the school system, the tax base. Everything will suffer as farm prices go down. So you have to have a sustainable economic price for farmers to continue. And when you build up mountainous surpluses, and we saw it in the 70s and in the 80s, you have low commodity prices, and that's not a good thing for the nation as a whole. You know, some people tried to blame the whole food versus fuel argument on higher commodity prices. And, well, that was self-serving interest funded by a well-financed campaign by people who wanted to point the finger at others for higher food prices when they should have looked in the mirror at themselves. So I think we're prepared for that debate. You know, there's an old saying on the farm, if you want something cheap, turn it over to farmers, they'll figure out how to overproduce. We can produce all we need. And ironically, when you talk about this, both corn and sorghum are the only two feedstocks where you get food and fuel value. Sugarcane ethanol, it's one or the other. Some of these dedicated energy crops, that's all you're going to get. But ironically, under this situation, you get food, feed, and fuel.
Well, in closing, you know, how can we get consumers or other farmers more involved in getting, you know, ethanol into the marketplace?
Well, you know, one of the things that we've started, a couple things. One is when we started this organization, when Steve and the other producers started it, they said, we've got to educate people about the benefits of ethanol. We just started for the first time a national national advertising campaign, very expensive, sustained, to reintroduce ethanol to a lot of people that don't understand the benefits. All they've heard is these made-up lies and myths that have existed the last few years. Those ads are currently running nationwide and will be for about 6 months. The second thing is, we've created this entity that any one of your listeners can sign up for. It's called Growth Force. And in less than a year, we've gone from zero to 17,000 members. And what we want them to do is serve a role of helping educate their neighbors, their local churches, their local residents, anyone they can, public policy makers, about the benefits of ethanol. But we just have to keep educating people. You know, a lot of folks don't understand, and they're shocked, Joanna, when we go in there and say, if the U.S. ethanol industry was a nation, we'd be the second largest provider of fuel to America, second only behind Canada. They're shocked when they find out that you actually get back 50% of the value, all the protein, all the oil, all the fiber, after you remove the starch to make ethanol as a high-value livestock feed. They don't understand the benefits.
Well, great. Well, thanks, Tom, and thanks, Steve, for joining us today.
Thank you.